It is week 37 of the year 2021. Outside, it's already dark, and the students next door have a party. But you are listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Father Roderick to the Max with a new intro song. I hope you enjoy this. Figured it's more the same vibe as I want to create with my regular show. I wanted to bring that over to the show that I record for you as my supporters and also my consultants in a certain way, my source of ideas and feedback. Thank you so much for your ongoing support, and I am glad to be back with this show. I took a few weeks off to go on vacation in France. I talked about that in my regular show. And then, of course, I had to get things started, all the work and the ongoing renovation project in the rectory of Bennekom, where I will move soon. But bit by bit, the dust is falling down on the floor again, and the pieces of the puzzle are all reconnecting, so I'm glad to be back. I don't know what all these metaphors have to do with one another, but what matters is I can get back into the saddle and get back to my old routine and bring you these shows on a weekly basis. We've got lots of stuff to talk about. Of course, we're going to cook in the kitchen, and I have a special French recipe for you. I will give you an update on my health and the improvements that I've been making. And, of course, we will talk a bit about superheroes and video games and much, much more. So stay tuned.
Just look at the X-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh, no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
I've been making a ton of progress when it comes to my health. This is a journey that I undertook a few months ago. And I guess I'm not the only one who has gained quite a bit of weight during the corona crisis, because we've been basically in lockdown for a number of months. And a lot of the normal things that we do to stay fit and to work out were almost impossible. Thankfully, I have my workout routines involve running, and I could still do that, even though a lot of the group sports, and if you had a membership of a gym, then most of you have not been able to use that. But running, fortunately, is almost always possible. However, because of the just all the complications during this COVID year behind us, I just didn't get around to it. Plus, I think with all the stress of having to move and staying here at the rectory, I just didn't pay much attention to my health, and it suffered greatly from it. I was at one point heavier than I'd ever been before. Now, that's never super heavy. I think the heaviest that I was, I think a few months ago, I was like 84 kilograms. However, I'm just a hobbit. You know, my height is 1 meter and 75 centimeters. I don't know what that is in inches, but I'm not that big. And so my BMI was definitely in where it shouldn't be. And the app that I use, I have one of those smart scales. It's a Mi. The brand is Mi. I think it's from Xiaomi. So it's a Chinese brand. It's very cheap. I think it only cost me $20 or something, but it is wired it uses Bluetooth to communicate with an app on my phone, and so I was able to not only track my weight and some other parameters, but it also assesses your weight, and so it kept telling me that my BMI was on the far end of being overweight, not obese, but definitely overweight, and then in the dangerous part of being overweight. And so it told me that I had to go back to my ideal weight, which according to the app is 66 kilos. So imagine weighing 84, and that's really way too much, and then having to lose about 20 kilos. That is quite a challenge, but it's a challenge that I accepted. And I also knew the path. I knew what to do because I've done this before. I don't think that I
that I ever went as far as 66. But in the meantime, I've learned way more about a healthy weight and how to. It's not just about dieting. It's about a lifestyle change. You have to make conscious decisions of living in a different way and spending your time in a different way. And for me, the big addition to this whole package is what I talked about in the walk of this week. It's sleep and the quality of sleep and also the consistency of sleep. So with that added to the mix, I looked back in my Google Fit archives. When was the last time that I consistently lost weight? And it's a couple of years ago. And back then I went from 80 to, I think, 74. And then I ran a marathon. So I always combined it with not just counting calories, but also with working out. Otherwise, you can still lose weight, but it just takes way more time. So I set myself a goal to consistently start losing weight and working out. And I've been extremely faithful to the workout app that I've been using way more than ever before. So it has benefited my overall speed, the quality of my workouts, but it also contributed greatly to weight loss. And it literally flew off. That combined with healthy habits, so no more snacking, no more cheat days. All that is not necessary if you make a mindset change. I just wanted to eat healthy and enjoy what I eat. So it's combination of healthy food and at the same time good cooking. Eating healthy does not have to be a punishment. On the contrary, so all that resulted in me losing. Going from 84 to now 74. So I've already lost 10 kilos and I started this journey. How long have I been running and working out? Probably about 2.5 months or something like that. So maybe it's more than that. I just don't remember. But it's over the summer. I lost 10 kilos, which is, 20 pounds? So that's not all too shabby. And I know it's still coming off and it's going quite fast. So I'm sure that if I consistently keep doing my workouts and continue this lifestyle, and especially also with the sleep improvements, I think this time I can make it until 66. And I'm just going to try it and see how that works out. I know it's a healthy weight. It's not like super slim or anything. I don't want to go too far. But it already is changing my physique. I look very different than I did a few months ago. And I can tell that because I'm still editing my TV show. And we did most of those tapings or film sessions when I weighed 84. And now that I've lost 10 kilos, I still recognize myself, of course, but I can definitely tell that I was pretty heavy at the time. The puffiness is gone. And I know that if I lose another 10 kilos, 8 kilos, I'm going to look... people are going to start asking me if I'm well. That happened long ago as well. Because then, of course, you start to... Well, right now, the fat is also... counteracting the wrinkles and everything. And I'm an old man, so I'm totally entitled to have wrinkles. But if you are a little bit heavy, then that kind of compensates for the wrinkliness. So I'm pretty sure that I will look different 8 kilograms from now, but I will be a ton healthier. And I already look so much more, I don't know, vibrant. My step is different. I feel different. So I'm pretty happy with the progress that I've made. I'm also extremely proud of the fact that I've been able to continue to live a healthy lifestyle all through the summer holidays and during my vacation in France. And that's a first. And I've been just very consistent in telling my fellow priests, this is what I eat. I don't drink alcohol. I don't care that much for alcohol anymore. And I'm going to bed at 10 o'clock. I'll be in bed no matter what. So I'm not going to stay up late. And well, you know, I'll still cook for you guys and I'll still come along, but I won't eat everything and no need for chips or feel free, but I'm not partaking. And it was actually a lot easier than I thought it was. I always feel like a bit of a spoil sport if you don't give in to social pressure. But this time I'm glad that I said it right from the get-go. Like the first evening, I was like, no, thank you. I'm not drinking right now. I'm trying to work on my health. And the reason that I'm not drinking alcohol is that it really impacts my sleep in a very negative way. And for me, sleep right now is a very important ingredient of my recovery. And that was it. That I said it once, and they really took that seriously. And I never got any comments on it at all. And we had the vacation was just as fun. So yeah, I'm very, very happy with how that turned out. And the result is that over the 2 weeks that I was in France, I lost another kilo or so. Plus, I gained a ton of speed by training in the mountains. And I woke up like 6 o'clock in the morning. So I was running outside when it was still dark. And it's beautiful there. There's no traffic. You're in the middle of nature, surrounded by hills. And then when I came home 2 hours later, the guys were still sleeping, you know, and I was already like super awake. And so I started to make breakfast. And when they came down the stairs, I was like, all right, let's get going. And that's so different from previous years where normally I would use the vacation time to sleep and I would be tired all the time. And that just wasn't very beneficial for the vacation itself, because now I had so much energy that I went to see things and film and whatnot every single day. There's not one day that was lost and that I didn't use to discover more of France and enjoy the vacation. So even though it was barely 2 weeks, it feels like I've been there a month because I had so much energy and I used it for so many cool things. So yeah. The improvements are super encouraging and are making it easier and easier to stick to my healthy habits. Speaking of which, I also transfer that to the kitchen. The French are known for their very good kitchen and their you know, state-of-the-art cuisine. But what you often don't realize is that their food is also very healthy, and the quality comes from using natural ingredients. There's nothing refined there. It's honest cooking. And what they also don't have is all that fast food and all those unhealthy habits that we have in some of our countries. So they do enjoy a glass of wine, and I'm not saying that all the French are super healthy, but in general, if you just stick with the traditional cuisine, then it is actually very, very good and healthy and natural, especially when you are vacationing in a southern part of France where actually you get your stuff from the market and from the local butcher. And one of the recipes that I learned there from the inhabitants of the village where we were staying is something I definitely want to try out. I haven't found the right ingredients yet, but I loved it. And it is made with lentils. Now, I do enjoy lentils, but for me, it's more a winter food. It's something I don't eat it every week, but I do like the red lentil soup with tomatoes, and you cook it and you put in some chicken stock or something like that. That makes for a very healthy, nice, very filling soup. But that's about it, what I did with lentils. Now, when we were there in this village, one of the last evenings, we were invited by one of the villagers, who's also one of the sacristans, who was helping us every morning with Mass, to join him for a nice evening. And he took us to his
wine's basement or cellar, and offered us the most exquisite wines that he had there, but also some good traditional French cheese from the region, which was delicious. But the biggest surprise for me was that they were actually used to eat lentils when they were having a drink. And it's like, wow, I just associated lentils with just an evening meal. And it's a full meal because it's very filling. But apparently, in the Auvergne, it is very normal when you have a drink and you're just spending a nice evening to also eat some lentil salad. And this is how you make it. The original recipe requires you to buy green lentils from the Auvergne, which is actually, which I didn't know, something that is protected brand-wise. It's like mozzarella cheese from a certain region, or what is it? The cheese you sprinkle on the pasta. Oh, mamma mia. Non mi ricordo. È strano. Sometimes my brain just malfunctions. But anyway. Every region in Europe sometimes has its specialities. Also wine, you can't make champagne unless you make it in the region of France that is called Champagne. Otherwise you have to call it bubbly wine. But you're not allowed to use the word champagne if the thing is not made in the Champagne region of France. So the same apparently is the case with these lentils. So the green lentils, they're kind of a little bit tougher than regular lentils. You can buy them fresh or in a can or dried, and then you have to put them in cold water, of course. And so that's, of course, the most affordable ones are the dried ones. But you can use, I guess, any green lentils. But they have to be green, not brown, not red, but green. I haven't found those yet in the Netherlands. That's why I didn't prepare this at home yet. You use cold water. That's important. Not boiling water. Cold water. You put the lentils into cold water. Then you cook them for 20 minutes. So from cold to boiling water. Around 20 minutes. They still have to be a bit tough. You don't have to cook them to a pulp. Then you cook bell peppers, red bell peppers, in a pan with some olive oil. So you just cut them into small pieces. You have to use the red bell peppers. You know, by the way, that the color of the bell pepper is just a matter of the age of the bell pepper. So a green bell pepper is just a bell pepper that hasn't matured yet. And the same is true for yellow. So all these different colors are just how long you leave them on the plant. So in this recipe, they use red bell peppers because they have the most taste. You also cut some tomatoes into, well, they cut them into pretty small chunks. So no wedges, but just smaller chunks. Then you let the lentils cool down. That's important because this is eaten cold. And then you add herbs. And when I asked what kind of herbs, they were talking herbs de Provence, so French herbs. Actually, I need to Google what's in there because they were using dried herbs. But I guess you can probably also use fresh herbs. Let me see what's in there. It's a melange of herbs, but what is in it? Should be on Wikipedia somewhere. I think it's thyme. Okay. Oregano. Okay, I would say that's Italian, but what else? Marjorie. Basil. Sally. Lavender. I wonder what Sally is in English. Let me see. Sage. Oh, sage. So basically very classic herbs. Just cut them up and mix them in. And it's all done, of course, by taste. You know, it's there's no, it's not necessary to use specific measures. Just sprinkle it and taste it, and if it's good, you leave it. If it's not strong enough, then you add. And then garlic, that's important. So I don't know if they used garlic powder or if they cooked also some garlic. That's possible. I guess you can probably just put some chopped up garlic in the oil because it will release its flavor way better than when you use raw garlic. And it's probably easier to digest as well. Make sure you don't burn the garlic or just use garlic powder. Salt and pepper, of course. Duh, obviously. And then you mix that all together. You let it cool down. Put it even in the fridge. And then you serve it cold with bread and French cheese. So basically what you do is you take a spoon, you put a little bit on a plate, and then you eat your bread and cheese. And for every once in a while, you take a bite of the lentils. And it was delicious. It was so good. So simple, but so fragrant and pure. And you could totally... The bell peppers gave it a bit of a sweet taste, but then the tomatoes are very fresh. And of course, these are, you know, good tomatoes, not the bloated, watery bulbs that we normally buy. But these were really good quality tomatoes, probably from the Netherlands, but it goes, oh, we export all our good tomatoes and we keep the watery ones for ourselves. But I just love that whole fresh, healthy, salty, garlicky taste of the lentils. So I'll post a picture on Instagram the moment I find green lentils here, and when once I've prepared this, and I will let you know if it tastes like the green lentils from the Auvergne. What I've learned on the internet this week. Well, I have actually, one of my habits is that I want to do something to develop myself every day. That is the hardest thing. It's easy to come up with something I do for my body, something I do for socializing, something I do for my income or my work, etc., etc. But finding something that through which I develop myself, that's something I've been used to putting that on a back burner. Oftentimes, I will just write down, I'll just read a book, like a nonfiction book. And I've done that quite a bit. I've been reading a lot of more kind of popular science stuff because, well, I learn from it. But I also want to master things. And so I set myself some goals this morning when I was opening up my OneNote journal. Every day you get a question. That's what I like about OneNote. And even if you don't really use OneNote for proper journaling, you can still, it still helps you to think about stuff. And I always write down a phrase or two as an answer. I try to keep it as simple as possible. And today the question was, what skill would you like to master? I gave it some thought. I was like, playing the piano, kind of already mastered that skill a little bit. Speaking another language, I already do that. That doesn't really feel like a skill. And then all of a sudden, it struck me. I know what I want to master, and I've already started to practice a little bit, or at least find ways in which I can improve that particular skill. And that is to have good handwriting. I have terrible handwriting, and it was one of the things as a child that I found the hardest thing to do is to write properly. We were taught a certain way of writing, which back then was the norm for every school kid, but I didn't like it. It didn't look nice, especially when I saw the handwriting of my parents. I was like, oh, I wish I could write like that. It's just so much nicer. We had this kind of no-nonsense, no-frills type of handwriting, like cursive writing. That was developed in the 70s, and I still don't like at all the way it looks. Plus, it is a very inconvenient way of writing. And that's, I think, one of the reasons I didn't like it, so I never really put some effort in it. And then when I had to take notes during my studies, I usually just tried to keep up with the teachers and writing down everything I heard. But because the handwriting that I was taught was so... the cursive was so... irritatingly clumsy,
It just became unreadable. I just kind of, one of the issues that I had with the handwriting and the way I'd learned it was all the M's and the N's. You know, the number of times you have to go down on the page and all my, I would just lose count of, especially if you have like a word with two N's in it, or I just would just like, sometimes I would have like three N's because I was writing so fast, and I never mastered it. A lot of the letters kind of resembled each other. The R was terrible, and it just doesn't look nice. And even the way you move your pen, I was always fascinated when I was in the United States, and I saw other people taking notes, and I was mesmerized by the way in which Americans wrote numbers, because the way they formed, for instance, an 8 was completely different of what I'd learned, and the way they moved their pen was so much more logical and resulted in a better number than the way I had learned to write these numbers. And the same is with so at one point with certain letters, like the T, the way I learned a T is terrible. It looks nothing like a T. And when I see other people's cursive handwriting, I'm just like, oh my gosh, if only I'd learned it to write it like that. However, it's one of the earliest things you learn as a child in primary school. So it's super hard, if you've used that all your life, to change it into something that looks better. It's basically reacquiring the skill. How do you do that? My shortcut in the past has been, if I want something to be readable for not just me, I write it in single letters. How would you say that? Like, not cursive, but the opposite of cursive. We call them block letters because they're kind of squarish. It's kind of lettering that you use also in comics. And I learned how to write relatively readable in that way, but it's a very slow way of taking notes, of course, because you have to, every single letter has to be is an action, and so it's not fast enough for taking notes. So I was looking through TikTok, my source of knowledge and wisdom, and then I saw that there were actually some TikTokers that were teaching other people how to write nice, how to do lettering, how to do calligraphy. And a lot of them were using their iPad to do that. And some of them, once I started following them, I noticed that on Instagram, they and on Facebook, they offered links to templates that you could download. And then you import that template into an app on your iPad. And it's almost like an underlying, like, not a cheat sheet, but you can trace over the letters on the original, and then it has open space for you to write those letters yourself. And the promise is, with that method, is you do that a number of weeks, and then you will start to memorize the way in which these letters are formed. So it's basically learning by imprinting the mechanics of that. It takes quite a bit of time, but I've been amazed by my own improvements. I started not with cursive, but I started with, what if I want to write something that looks really nice? Like, for instance, a menu or a nice thank you letter to someone. What if I master an alphabet that actually looks as if it is printed? Something that looks as if it is a calligrapher who made it. And so I have downloaded a few of those templates, and I've been rehearsing or exercising on a training on the iPad. And it's already really impacting the readability of my individual lettering. So encouraged by that, I also promised myself I'm going to give myself time to master a completely different cursive style of writing. It has to be done, because I am sick and tired of not being able to write properly without using a computer or an iPad. It is time to make a change, and it actually gives me real pride to make something that looks pretty. And yes, it does take quite a bit of effort to master it, but then I'll have something for the rest of my life. So it's worth the investment. That's one thing that I've learned. Other thing is I promised myself to teach myself to speak Latin. It's mostly because I want to boast to Father Henry that he's not the only one who knows Latin. And he's very good at Latin, but he's always approaching languages from a very grammatical vocabulary approach. The same with Italian and stuff. He's very good with languages, but his approach is the total opposite of how I approach a language. I want to learn a language by speaking it, by emulating the way it is used. And I don't care about grammar. I don't care about vocabulary. I just need phrases, and then my brain will make the connections. And over time, that's how I've learned to speak French in as a second language. I didn't sit down with books. No, I was forced to speak French all the time for 5 years. I listened and I tried to imitate. That's how I taught myself French. And now I want to do the same with Latin. The only problem, slight problem, is most people that speak Latin are dead and have been dead for 2,000 years. So how am I going to do that? Well, I found an app, thanks to a fellow priest who is using that to enhance his vocabulary in multiple languages. And it's called AnkiDroid. So it's Anki, A-N-K-I, and then D-R-O-E-I-D, AnkiDroid. Now, this is available for Android. That's probably why it's called AnkiDroid, Android. So, but there, it's basically flashcards. But this is a very enhanced, automated version of doing flashcards. I'm sure that there is something similar for iOS as well. But what makes AnkiDroid so interesting is that it has databases of other users. And so you just type in something you want to learn, and it can be languages. Oh, wait a minute. I see it's also available for Apple. It's in the App Store. However, is it available for the iPhone? No, but it is available for the... Oh, wait a minute. No. Apparently, it also came out for iOS. Oh, wow, that's cool. Anyway, so I typed in Latin, and then you get a huge list of vocabulary training, but it's all passive vocabulary. And then I found the list that I was looking for, and it's conversational Latin, or I'm not sure what it's called specifically, but it's. I think it is, in Latin it says, do you speak Latin? And what it does, it gives you vocabulary in two ways. So it will train you not only to translate Latin words and phrases, and this is based on most used words. So it is basic vocabulary, basic Latin speak. But it will also do the opposite. It will give you an English phrase like, I don't know why I'm so tired today. And then you have to translate that into Latin. And oh my gosh, I've been studying Latin for 6 years when I was in high school. So I was actually pretty good at Latin. But it was all passive. Once you turn it around and you try to speak it actively, it is a totally different ball game. And it is hard, but I'm getting the hang of it. And I also noticed that once you are forced to speak Latin, it makes understanding Latin so much easier. Because I have to go back to my existing knowledge. Oh, why do you say it like that? And then you start to do the analysis of the words and the grammar, and then it all comes back now because I'm actively trying to speak it. And so it's much more, for me, it's way more motivating to try to speak it than just to try to translate it. Because that's what I did in high school. And well, you're basically translating 2,000-year-old texts, and that is fun for a moment, but it's much more fun to be able to have a conversation with someone in Latin. So, wow, I'm really, really enjoying that. But I'm still at the very, very beginning of the process. But Anki, the fun thing of AnkiDroid is gives you these half-hour sessions. And so if you don't know a word and you press reveal me the answer, then you can choose, was this hard? And it will come back a few minutes later. You know, this was okay. It will come back 10 minutes later. This was easy. It will come back next week. And you do get penalized for if you don't know the answer. So it will extend the time. But I usually can do an entire session, which is about 12 minutes. It takes me about half an hour to go through a session like that. But since I've been doing that, it is helping. And it's the repetition, which is automated. That's the strength of that program. And I'm pretty sure it's like a marathon. If I do this for a year, I'm pretty sure that I'll be able to have a simple conversation. Which, of course, you never know when you need to speak Latin, right? The other day, I was talking with Father Henry about something he wants to initiate in his parish, and that is to have a mass from time to time that is geared towards people that have lost the habit of going to mass, or for who the regular liturgy is almost too difficult because they don't know the culture. So he wants to do something that is low threshold. Now, they've been looking at examples from the rebuilt movement. They have a very almost evangelical way of celebrating mass. Now, you know my opinion about that. I talked about that a number of episodes ago. I'm not a fan, but I can see that for some people this would work. And then you've got Robert Mellon. Father Mellon, anyway, from Canada, who has a more moderate approach when it comes to it. It's less evangelical. But he too says we really have to make sure that the quality of the liturgy is able to reach people. Liturgy is not for God, even though it's directed to God, but it is to help us strengthen our relationship with God. So if liturgy does not work, you have to do something about quality. So Father Henry was like, but where do you start? How do you do this? I don't see myself in like rock star masses with bands and everything. And I said, you're totally right. Don't do that. It won't work because that's not you. And that is also for a lot of people that would not work. And instead, I proposed something that we did in my previous parish, and that is to do a fresh-up mass. That's literally how it was called in Dutch then. Opfrismis, which rhymes. And it was a mass with a commentator, which is an official liturgical function. It's optional. It's not obligatory, but it can be used in certain circumstances to help people understand what is happening during the celebration. So we came up with a number of texts that explain the mass or the various elements in a very, you know, simple, easy way, but also short. It's not supposed to be like a huge, it's not like a soccer commentary or something like that. But it is meant as a refresher for people that go to mass. Like, this is why we do things a certain way. This is why the priest says or does this. This is why the church looks the way it looks and why the altar is positioned in this place, why people genuflect, etc. And we've always had tremendously positive feedback on those masses. And it also was able to bring in a lot of people that were invited by co-parishioners because they could tell them, hey, come to this mass. This is for you, even if you may decide not to go to mass afterwards. But at least this will help you understand what we do, what is important for us. And it's really targeted towards people that are new to this whole liturgy. And so I sent Father Henry one of those booklets that we developed. It's already 2 years old or 3 years old. This is pre-COVID time, because once COVID came into our lives, there were so many restrictions that we've never been able to do one of those masses anymore. But hopefully now that the situation is improving, we can soon do one of those over here. Just wanted to share that with you.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
I wish I was, but no, I'm not reading that many comic books. But every once in a while, I find a gem that I want to share with you. And this time, it was a comic book that I discovered on 9/11. Of course, this year, it's 20 years ago. And I'm following Michael Straczynski, who is the writer of Babylon 5, a science fiction series, Sense8, a series on Netflix, I think. And he's also been involved in some other big franchises and did a lot of superhero scripting for comics. And he alerted his followers that one of the comics that he wrote was available for free on every year on 9/11, and it is an amazing Spider-Man issue that is totally a tribute to the heroes around 9/11, the people, the firefighters, everyone who came together to help and to save lives and to rebuild what was destroyed. And so I downloaded the comic on my Kindle, and wow, I was still blown away. Even though this is 20 years old, the texts are still so relevant. A lot of it almost reads like a poem. It features Spider-Man, and in the background you see other superheroes just working among the firefighters, doing nothing superhero-like, and it all starts with people yelling at Spider-Man, "Why didn't you prevent this? Why? Where were you when this happened?" So it's one of those rare occasions where fiction meets reality, and these superheroes feel utterly powerless, and that's what Spider-Man gives back to these people and what he reflects upon. A lot of it happens in thought bubbles. It's like, yeah, I wasn't there. I didn't prevent this from happening. How could this happen? It's overwhelming even for a superhero. And that makes all of a sudden, I don't know, it made me connect with the character of Spider-Man on a whole different level. It's like, yeah, this is too big for even superheroes. The hatred, but what you can do, whether you're a superhero or not, you can rebuild. You can come together. And so a lot of the rest is an homage to all these people that did that, that forgot about their differences, found each other in this common effort to honor the dead, prevent this from ever happening again, and rebuilding something on the ruins of those two towers. And the reason that it still struck me today is that it shows the strength of mankind that can overcome its differences to find each other in the most desperate hours. And it's something that we desperately need right now in many of our countries. There is a huge temptation of extremism, polarization, hatred of one another. And this is not just happening in our politics. It's not just happening on social media. This is also happening in the church, in my church, in the Catholic Church, where there's so much discord, so much, so little faith in one another, let alone in the Holy Spirit. There is a lot of hatred and fear and just dark side stuff coming from people that declare themselves to be the saints. You know, we are better than you, so we have the right to criticize you. But they go so far that they destroy whatever is left. And I feel that also in the church, we need to come together. We need to find each other. And the same is so important for our countries. If we don't, someone else will take the lead. Other groups will take advantage of the weakness of division. And the Catholic Catechism identifies the source of all this division. It's the devil himself. You recognize his presence by his works. And what he does is the opposite of what Christ does. Christ brings people together. You are brothers and sisters. You have but one Father. And you have to forgive each other, support each other, care for each other, and only speak truth with love, and love with truth, never separate from one another. And when you see the division and the polarization in our societies and also in our faith communities, you don't see
truth and love going together. You see truth used as a weapon or love used as an excuse. But that's not Christian. That is what's dividing people, what sows discord and mistrust. And it's sad that 20 years after 9/11, we seem to have learned nothing. And we seem to accomplish so little. So these remembrances, these yearly commemorations, also of the Second World War, or the end of Second World War, and many other battles, I think should be an occasion for us to reflect upon what made us overcome these dark hours. And it's never something we've done alone. We always needed one another, and we needed to unite in order to make any progress. Let that be front of mind in these difficult years. And even though we cannot, I don't pretend being able to change my country or the world, but I can't change my own attitude. So as soon as I notice that I'm starting to take a polarized position, or I approach someone without love and mercy, I have to correct myself, because I have to set an example. You can change the world around you by your own actions. And then hopefully that will catch on and people will follow that example. But this, all this based on this incredible script that Michael Straczynski wrote for the Amazing Spider-Man 9/11 tribute. And even though he declares himself to be, agnostic, I've always felt that Mike Straczynski is actually so close to what the gospel is all about. I feel so connected to many of the things he says and the art he creates. And whereas I think that he would never admit to being on the same line as a Catholic priest, but I have great respect for that man. And there are things that maybe I have different ideas about, but when you know his backstory and the things that he went through, I understand where he's coming from. And it is one of those rare people that have, I think, an important message, an incredible message, because he's not a person of faith, but he's defending very important values that I think are the core message of the gospel, and maybe sometimes not, but that shouldn't keep me from admiring the things that I feel are so true. That's a typical Catholic approach of the culture. It's not we are good and the culture is wrong, not create opposites, but always look for the light and the truth and the beauty in everything that surrounds you. Also in the culture of people that are not part of your religious group. Because God's Holy Spirit, whenever people create, the Holy Spirit is there. You cannot create without the Creator working in you. And so art is maybe one of the easiest ways to connect with other people that may not share your faith, but may still be open to the same Creator that speaks to them and that works in them, even without them knowing. That is my superhero comic of this week.
The humanoid must not escape.
That wraps things up with some gaming talk, as I mentioned in this week's episode of the walk. I do give myself time to do a bit of gaming every day, because it's something that helps me to be mindful and to zone out whatever worries me for tomorrow or frustrates me from yesterday. Some of these games have the quality to disconnect me from the past and the future and just let me be in the here and now. And the game that I'm usually playing these days to get into that zone where I can just be in the game is Stranded Deep. It's a It's a very cool survival game that was developed a couple of years ago. It's and now it's available for PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. And it's a bit clunky. It's definitely not the same smooth gameplay as, for instance, Valheim. But the setting is very different. It's really, you feel like you are on an island. And it is also quite hard because there's a lot that can kill you. So trying to stay alive. Wow. This is the sound of the very visual trailer. So you crash with an airplane, like Lost, and then you find yourself in a raft surrounded by a very vicious shark that is circling your boat. And you have to go to this small island with a few palm trees that you're breaking down. You try to grow your own food, eat coconuts, kill sharks and roast their meat, avoid venomous snakes, try to survive the night, and then travel to other islands where there is actually much more to discover, and then ultimately you try to get home. So maybe you can build a helicopter, swim to another island, and if you survive all the monsters of the sea, you may even get it to an airplane and rescue yourself. So far, I've been able to stay alive for about 10 days. And I messed up completely my first session on the island, the first time I played the game. I thought it was a good idea to cut down all the palm trees because I needed wood. I like coconuts. And I was like, okay, I see some saplings of coconut trees. So yeah, probably in a few days, there will be new palm trees on the island. Big mistake. Palm trees take a few years to grow. So no, these saplings will not grow into full-fledged palm trees. So all of a sudden, I was stuck on that island, deprived of my source of wood, my source of coconuts. So that was basically literally a dead end. So I rebooted. I started again with the knowledge that I had. It's one of the advantages of playing video games. There's no permadeath. And now on the second island, I've only done one session yesterday evening, but I'm already doing so much better. So yeah, that's my game of the week. I really enjoy it, and I'm still looking forward to playing more Valheim because one of these days, I think an update is coming out with a lot more new abilities to build houses and stuff. What I like in Valheim is just create big castles and stuff. So that is what I wanted to share with you, and with that, we've come to the end of yet another Father Roderick to the Max. And I chose some relaxing, jazzy piano music to end the show instead of all the flashy, high-energy jingles that I used before vacation. Because after all, I'm calm now and relaxed, and hopefully you too. So thank you so much for listening. And if you're listening to this, it means you are one of my supporters. I appreciate you being there and to form this community with me. And I'm looking forward to a great end of this year, a great fourth quarter, where I'll be finally in my home with a good internet connection, and where the constant leaking of energy because I had to manage the renovations will be over, and I can pour that energy straight back to you. I get all preachy with this music in the background. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Take care.